Welcome to Booked, where two guys tell you about the books they're reading. I'm Livia Snedden.
And I'm Rob Olson. The book we're talking about tonight is Blood for You, a literary tribute to G.G. Allen.
Rob, I didn't quite feel the energy in that. Blood for You, a literary tribute to G.G. Allen. Let's give this the intro it deserves.
Well, if you're the one... All right, so school me. Take me to school here.
All right, so... I want to say that we did break. We had two New Year's resolutions, and this one kind of breaks that one, that I was actually willing to go back on something we said we wouldn't do, that we wouldn't do a collection, we wouldn't do an anthology. But I'm standing behind. Nowhere on here does it say it's an anthology or collection. It is a literary tribute to G.G. Allen.
I like the emphasis.
I'm telling you, this is something special. And for something special, what do we have to do? We have to bring on... a guest.
That's right. So who better to join us to talk about a literary tribute to G.G. Allen than a colleague in the podcasting world, Frank Edler. Before we welcome him on and hear from him, I'm just going to read you a quick bio that he has been live editing in our shared document since we established it. Frank J. Edler is the author of Scared Silly, five frighteningly funny tales, sure to tickle your funny bone. His stories can also be found in Still Dying 2, Strange vs. Lovecraft, Strange Effin' Stories. Is it effin' or is it fucking?
It's fucking.
Okay, Strange Fucking Stories. I'm guessing that's an Amazon thing. As well as the State of Horror Anthologies, which there's like four or something that you're in or something like that. So that's pretty awesome. His writing spans horror to bizarro and points in between. He is also co-host of the wildly popular podcast Books, Beer, and Bullshit. Look for Frank's full-length novel, Brats in Hell, eventually.
Can I bring a little more energy to one part?
Yeah.
Books, Beer, and Bullshit. There you go. Frank,
there it
welcome
is.
To Booked.
Living the dream here, guys. This is just like, wow, I'm on... Booked podcast.
You're on Booked. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
He's going
to
bring up the energy level, apparently.
That's cool. I'll just turn down the volume and it'll seem like he's just talking normal.
Oh, should I step down?
No, you're good.
I'm trying to bring the GG tonight.
That's what we're all worried. Well, that's what I'm worried about.
Before we get into anything, Rob insisted on a disclaimer for this episode. So the opinions expressed herein are not those of Rob. That's really what he wanted to say, that anything said on this is not anything he believes, and that this is likely. So we've done some disclaimers before. We did one for 65 Stirrup Iron Road.
Yep.
We did one for Backdooring the Brat. And I think that Rob had less... I think he had less concern about us doing a disclaimer for that than for this. So,
yeah.
If you're offended by anything, just turn this off now. Well, is that fair?
Specifically, there may be talk about bodily functions, uncommon use of bodily functions. I'm going to put it that way. Some sexual situations. I'm sure there's going to be tons of profanity and stuff like that. So if that's not your... I mean, we're going to do... There will be eventually quotes. So I'm sure. So if that's not your kind of thing, maybe this isn't the episode to dive into.
Yeah, maybe. But it's literary body functions.
It's, that is... no? Rob?
I mean...
No,
it's art.
That is an argument.
It's an argument we're likely to have throughout the course of this episode. Yeah. So
the quote marks around the title, the word literary in the title, were put there by me. Jokingly, but still.
Shall I get the listener started with a synopsis of this book?
I would love for you to do that.
Think G.G. Allen was extreme? You don't know the half of it. G.G. Allen's exploits are legendary. The music, the shows, the violence, the bodily fluids. But G.G. Allen was confined to a world where he couldn't fulfill his potential. He punched and kicked at the boundaries, eager for something bigger, something crazier, something much more fucked up. But the real world refused to give him the adventures he needed. Now, thanks to Underground Fiction's most talented scum fucks, Gigi is cast in a series of adventures that truly befit his outlaw spirit. In these pages, Gigi Allen is a secret agent engaging in cult-smashing missions in exchange for dirty sex with George and Barbara Bush. He's a shit-eating spaceship piloting and time-traveling savior of humanity. He's an Orisha called upon to save prisoners from roid rage mutant guards. He's one half of a deep-fried onion ring Ouroboros with his soulmate John Wayne Gacy. He's thousands of clones living inside your giant robot body. Get ready to see Gigi Allen like you've never seen him before. I'm telling you, we should probably kick it off with our level of involvement, knowledge, or whatever of Gigi Allen, because we talked very briefly before the podcast, and we do think that this might skew how you see the rest of this book. So, Frank, you're our guest. Would you like to tell us kind of, you know, what you know about Gigi, or when you learned it, or you know, maybe percentage-wise what your level of knowledge is, or give listeners some idea of where you were coming from when you cracked this open?
You know, it's funny why you guys invited me on for this project, because I actually don't really have much of a appreciation for Gigi Allen's music. What I do listen to punk wise and in the vein of Gigi Allen is the Meat Man. I've been a fan of theirs for a long, long time, since high school. And their lead singer, Tesco V, is constantly talking about Gigi Allen, pays tribute to him. It's a mentor or a hero of his. But, you know, I only ever heard the stories of the pooping and the punching people and all the debauchery. So it wasn't really my thing. So I never really pursued his music. And until this project was announced and I saw people getting excited about it that I kind of run in circles with, and then I agreed to do this show with you to cover it, that's when I really started like checking out YouTube and iTunes and listening to his music and finding out what he's all about. I can't say that I'm a bigger Gigi Allen fan now, but I guess I have a better understanding of who the guy is.
That's fair, and thank you for taking the time to do the research. That's awesome.
It was fun.
Homeboy's a professional.
Yes, he is. Absolutely.
I Rob. Sat there and watched YouTube and watched Gigi Allen taking a crap for an hour.
Anything.
I'm a professional.
Anything for your art, right? Is that?
Yes, I love to suffer for my art.
So, Rob, how about you?
Hold on, I'm going to take a drink. All right. My full perspective of Gigi Allen is summed up very easily. There's a girl that I was, I've been longtime friends with, and we dated briefly, who, this was back in the early 90s. We first started hanging out and stuff in, I don't remember what proto social media account it was, but her username, I think it was probably AOL or something like that, was Murder Junkie. And that didn't mean anything to me at the time, but Simon was on. She, you know, would tell me about how, you know, she's a big fan of Gigi Allen and stuff like that. And at one point, hanging out with her at her place, I was introduced to a pair of soiled underwear that belonged to Gigi's brother Merle. I guess at a show or something, he had decided to leave a tribute in his underwear and gave it to her, and she had it tacked up on his on her door to her bedroom. It was just semen, though. Just semen, nothing else.
This was the end of your romantic involvement with this young lady, I'm assuming?
I mean, we were on again, off again.
Nothing will stop Rob.
Nothing. Yeah, that's a red flag to most people. For me, I was like, well, I'm willing
to overlook
a couple things. It's only semen. If it was like anything else, I'd be like, I don't know, you know, maybe take a picture and hang that up, or I don't know. So,
Frank, in your teen years, would a girl that you were kind of on again, off again, if she actually had mounted a pair of semen-stained underwear that belonged to another man on her wall, would you have called it quits, or?
I think I would have started a podcast much earlier.
There you go.
I think that was a backhanded way of saying I have an interesting life, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I could interview that girl.
I'm still friends with her. We could get her. We should have. I should have thought about getting her on the podcast, or at least have her say something about it.
That would have been. Yeah, that would have been something.
Damn.
I learned of G.G. Allin in my teen years. He was kind of frequently a guest on the Jonathan Brandmeier show in Chicago on The Loop. And I was kind of fascinated by this this guy who, you know, at that point had served time in prison for macing members of the audience and was going to commit suicide on stage one day and kind of these crazy antics. And, you know, one of those interviews he did was a lead up to a show he was doing in Chicago. It was I think it was either it was either 93 or 92, but it was the last show he did in Chicago before before he died. And I got to go see him, and it's still to this day is the most surreal experience I've ever had. Because I got to tell you, you can watch the videos. I've watched some of the documentaries. I've seen some of his live stuff. But being in a room, the TV, much like, you know, movies or news or anything, always is there's that level of desensitization that you're seeing it on a screen. There really, it doesn't even come close to comparing with being in the same room with a guy who's trying to shove a microphone in his ass. And when he can't, gets mad and smashes himself in the forehead enough that he's bleeding so badly that he basically can't go on with the show. Shortest set I've ever seen, it was probably about 25 minutes. And they were the only act. There wasn't an opening act. This was the act, and it lasted less than half an hour.
And you went to see him because you were into him, or you just wanted to see the spectacle?
I wanted to see the spectacle. Now, subsequently, I have found that some of his songs, at least the poppier G.G. Allin stuff, kind of appeals to me. I think that if someone recorded that music in an actual studio, not because most G.G. Allin recordings sound like one of those old school cassette recorders, had like the handle and like the five buttons on the front. The red was the record one. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. Most of his music sounds like they threw one of those in the corner of a living room and played. So I think if someone cleaned some of that up, I fantasized is the right word, I guess so. After G.G. Allin died, I thought, if I scraped together about 10 grand, I could probably buy the rights to all of his music from his brother and actually have like a halfway decent band become the new whatever, the new Toilet Rockers or the new AIDS Brigade or whatever, and do all of his music and be somewhat successful. That never materialized. But does anybody think that I couldn't have given Merle Allen like 10 grand worth of cocaine and gotten the rights to the music? Does anybody disagree with me on this?
It's hard to disagree with you, but on the same token, wouldn't somebody already done that by now?
That's
yeah,
a very
I don't
strong
know.
Point.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, I thought about it. Never scraped together 10 G's to do it. But you never know. Maybe we convince Rob that that's what we should do with all the Patreon money that we're swimming in.
That's a great idea. You can get in, like, if you get a higher donation, you can sing backing vocals on I Want to Fuck You in the Ass or something.
Yeah. It's All Right to Expose Yourself to Kids. It's a personal favorite of mine from the G.G. Allin.
I think that I see a future where I just have to spend a lot of hours working on weird projects that Livius is into that don't really go anywhere. I see a future of that. I'm hoping right. That's not the case. I'm hoping that they're all wildly successful.
Are we ready to talk about this book, guys? I guess I should say, Rob, are you ready to talk about this book?
Yeah, so in typical review, I know that we're saying that this isn't technically an anthology or a collection because it's a literary tribute, but it does have a collection of different stories, and in the typical format that we go through is that we each have chosen before we started this episode a couple of stories. For the sake of time, we chose two each that we were going to talk about that were our favorites, or in my case, the ones I liked the most. And we're going to kind of go around and talk about those. Another thing that we've done actually since the Warmed and Bound anthology, which was way back in episode like 37 of the podcast, is we're going to see if we can agree on an anthology winner, one story that kind of is the cream of the crop. Oh, I really hesitate. I regret saying that already, but so far every collection that we've done, I believe we've been able to unanimously decide on a best story. Am I right about that, Livius?
I believe you are right, and I think you're just going to fold. I think this time it's a Frank and I can decide one. You're going to be like, yeah, that's fine.
In advance, I'm just going to give in to whatever you guys agree on. So, Livius, I think that we should probably start it out with some enthusiasm, right? So why don't you reveal your first best?
It's always this way, right? Because I think most people who are putting together a collection try to lead with one of the strongest stories first. And I don't know if it was my level of excitement of getting into this or exactly how this story unfolded. I think it was the perfect story for the beginning of this collection, though. Kentucky Fried Christ by Andrew Wayne Adams. This story starts off with a little bit of a factual GG backstory, how he was, he was born and how his dad named him Jesus Christ Allen and how his mom changed his name later and how he was kind of weird in school. And it kind of goes through this progression until we show up in 1977 at the Cook County Fair, where GG is booted off stage, 30 seconds into his first song after they hear the content. And he's wandering around the fair, and he runs into a clown who is John Wayne Gacy in his full clown regalia. And the two of them kind of like have a drink together. And then the story gets really weird. There's time travel involved. There's an epic supernatural battle that ensues between the two of them that really opens up Gigi's abilities, for lack of a better term. I'm sure I have some quotes from this. We'll probably save that for quotes at the end. But you have these two kind of legendary guys, travel time to a KFC, which is why it's called Kentucky Fried Christ. They travel back to 1966 to one of the KFCs that John Wayne Gacy manages. And they it's mentioned in the synopsis, the onion ring Ouroboro. That happens. They become, I can't even talk about that. Like, I don't want to spoil it. Maybe towards the end we'll spoil some of these stories with some of the crazier stuff that happens. But this one, just the way it unfolds, it's the perfect opener for this collection. And, I mean, I kind of defer to you guys and let you guys pick stories first. We've got a little bit of crossover in some of my other favorites, but this one was easily one of my top three stories in this collection.
I'll be goddamned if he actually didn't run Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants. I just looked it up on Wikipedia.
I kind of figured. I didn't look, but it seemed like that story was grounded enough in reality with all the other stuff that it was possible. I had some questions about G.G. Allen actually performing as early as 1977, so I don't know if that's a thing. But I love the whole aspect of it. And one of the things that comes up throughout the course of this book is I tried to explain this to Rob, and Rob, I think, just rolled his eyes so hard he almost had an aneurysm. G.G. Allen was kind of larger than life. So when you do stories with him, you almost have to elevate him from there. And like I said, time traveling and the crazy shit that happens in this story, I think, is just perfect, a perfect tribute to G.G.
What people didn't hear on the last episode, the previous episode of the podcast, when we did the Halloween extravaganza, was after we were off the air, Livius described in detail this story to Amanda and Jesse, who were our co-hosts for that episode. And it was before I had started the book, so I was getting this story first through Livius's eyes, and he was so just like in a childlike state of wonder talking about it, but I knew I wasn't going to like it. So that's where we're at with that.
You know what I was wondering with this Kentucky Fried Christ, it isn't the only story that folds G.G. Allen and John Wayne Gacy together. And is that like a thing where they're like, why did he come up twice in his book? I wonder, do you know?
Let me play the G.G. Allen historian for the rest of this episode.
I did research, so I know, but I will let you be the historian. Okay.
G.G. Allen did visit Gacy in prison. And as a matter of fact, I know there's at least one letter. There's a website that collects letters from famous prisoners that they can acquire. And there is actually a letter from John Wayne Gacy to G.G. Allen that this website acquired. So they were kind of pen pals, and I know G.G. Allen visited him at least once or twice.
Oh, wow. Makes sense now.
Yeah, that's our subject.
I mean, without knowing that, they're two very fucked up individuals. So as weird as it seems to pair them up, it also kind of makes sense, too.
Yeah, I was not surprised. I think I saw that in the Hated documentary where they mentioned that relationship. And I thought to myself, like, it's not a surprise that G.G. Allen would seek out John Wayne Gacy and be like, I'm going to go visit this guy.
It didn't blow my hair back. I was like, yeah, I could see that happening.
Frank, do you have any thoughts on the story itself?
I agree. It was a good way to open up the book. Obviously, it's sort of biographical before it really kicks into fourth gear and goes absolutely off the freaking rails crazy. But not one of my favorites. And I think part of it was I wasn't getting the whole John Wayne Gacy thing until afterwards when, you know, I'm trying to figure out what that connection was exactly. Same thing, too, is I didn't know a lot about Gacy, and I wound up, you know, reading about him and owning KFCs and everything like that. So just made sense to start off with this, though, sure.
Rob, being from the Chicago area, have you ever seen the murder house, the John Wayne Gacy house?
No.
Park Ridge?
No, I haven't. Have you?
Yes, I have, actually.
Really?
Many years ago, I dated a young lady who had some friends who lived right down the street. And we went over there for like lunch one day, and someone had said something about, yeah, blah, 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 the Gacy house, blah, blah. And I go, oh, is that near here? And they're like, yeah, it's like a block from here. And I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah, you want to see it? So I said, yeah. So oddly enough, they told me, like, don't stop, don't stare at it, because the neighborhood tries to keep it really on the down low. And apparently, now this is back in the early 90s, the neighborhood, actually the township owns the house or owned the house at that time and like maintained it. Like they had like the light switches that would come on at certain times, and they came out and like mowed the lawn because they didn't want it to look out of the ordinary, but they owned it. And at that point, at least, had no intention of selling it. They were just going to continue to maintain the house and keep it as normal as possible. So like these people would have been like outcasts in the neighborhood if, you know, I would have stopped and pointed and we would have talked about it. It's like walk by and they're like, just, you know, look at it, but just like kind of keep moving, basically, was the gist of it.
Weird. You said that was in Park Ridge?
Park Ridge, yep.
When I hear Park Ridge, Illinois, I think of Hillary Clinton. That's where she's from.
Well, maybe she was raised in that house. That would explain a lot.
She's, yeah, I mean, not to get all political.
Yeah, don't get it. So,
I will say that, you know, the general idea with anthologies is to start strong and end strong. There was some strength to this. I mean, it definitely hit you with some really messed up stuff right out of the gate. So props to the editors for throwing some of their really weird stuff right at the beginning.
As opposed to all the normal stuff that we're going to talk about.
I said something positive.
Rob, would you like to go with your first story?
Sure. The book consists of 14 stories and then two more under the heading bonus tracks. One of them was by one of the editors of the book, M.P. Johnson, and that's one of my two. I'm putting under the title Rob Didn't Hate, because if it hasn't become obvious yet, it wasn't. And I'm going to go ahead and just pause right now and just kind of address the fact that sometimes when you read something, it's just not for you. And it's not that it's not a knock against any of the quality of the writing or any of the individual authors or anything like that. It's just like you can't get into the content. And I think that's what happened with this book for me. I was kind of expecting that. Generally in life, I'm not a big fan of talking about bodily functions in general. And that really is a prime focus of this book. So not not subject matter that I'm super excited about. But I want to say right off, when I say stuff like Rob didn't hate, it's not that any of this writing was necessarily bad. It's just that the content wasn't, you know, something that I'm super excited about. That being said, Bored with Brutality by M.P. Johnson. Livia, did we meet M.P. Johnson? I know we went to some events with him up in Minneapolis, right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
I don't know if we met him, like officially met him, but yes, we were definitely at a couple of things that he was at.
We were M.P. Johnson adjacent, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
his story, Bored with Brutality, basically, and I think one of the reasons I like this is going to be very obvious, takes G.G. Allen in the exact opposite direction of what everybody's impression of him is he decides to become a normal person, because that's kind of the most like anarchy thing he could do after all the crazy shit he's done in his life. And he becomes a normal person for years, until this garbage bag full of stuffed animals that magically is in his basement, starts attacking his normal suburban family. And then he has to kind of go full G.G. Allen to save the family, and then he kind of just reverts back to his normal self. It was a good story. It was interesting, and because of its placement in the book after you went through all of this crazy stuff, it was this nice kind of step back, almost like an interlude from all of the craziness. But it tied together well with like the theme of the overall book.
I am not going to just agree with this. I'm going to try to amplify what Rob said. It was really easy for me to pick my three favorites, and this one was definitely one of them. The bonus tracks, actually, both of those are the two guys who edited the books, which I think is why they were kind of thrown on as bonus tracks. And I'm really glad that MP Johnson and Sam Richard both decided to throw stories in there, because it seemed they were passionate enough about this book to put it together. So I almost think that MP Johnson probably had the story in his head before he. You know what I mean? I think that this was already a thought that was living within him when he decided to do this book. I could probably pull 30 quotes from the short story that I absolutely loved, because they were that kind of, here's GG trying to be normal, but he doesn't really know what normal is. And there's just some great, great examples, one of which I'm sure I'm going to try to read with a straight face later. But yeah, I really, really like the story a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to ditto that all the way. Definitely like the story. Definitely in my top three, top four. I think what was nice about it being at the end was, after going through these 14 other stories and all this poop and defecation and mutilation, it was almost weird, because now your head is in this space of this awful, deplorable action. And so when you read about G.G. Allen being quote unquote normal, you're sort of looking at it from the other side of, like, acting like a lunatic is the normal part. And you see quote unquote normalcy as something odd and alien. And that really got reflected in the story being at the end like that, I think.
Yeah, it was good. It was almost like a palate cleanser. But yeah, a nice kind of reversal of everything that you endured to get to that point.
Yeah, I guess Frank and I didn't defend ourselves properly when you start talking about the story. Oddly, I'm normally not into this kind of thing either. I'm not like the like dick and fart joke kind of guy. But it was just so fitting with this, because this is who Gigi was, But yeah, I just wanted to say, I guess, that I don't rub my own shit on myself unless there's a really good reason to.
I mean, have you?
So hold my breath there for a second to see if you're going to come back with that. No, I haven't. But I'm not saying I wouldn't. I just have to be given the right reason. That's all.
I mean, okay.
Frank, you're awfully quiet.
Yeah, I mean,
Frank's been there. Frank's been down that road.
It's never for self-enjoyment, but, sometimes the toilet paper breaks through. You get your own scent on yourself.
See, that makes me shudder, right? But I love every story in this. Look, that's so weird.
Our suburban lives are, Really, Livius, that made you shudder?
That made me shudder a little bit.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Wait till the quotes. Frank, give us a standout story, buddy.
I'm going to start off with Anarchy Cafe by Nick Catto. That one was pretty interesting. It was basically about G.G. Allen. He gets like an STD, starts off right away. His dick just keeps growing on him and growing to completely abnormal proportions. So abnormal that people start taking up residence with inside of it, and eventually grows so large that a nightclub conducts business inside G.G. Allen's swollen, STD-ridden penis. And it grows so big, it's taken over the town. The authorities get involved, the government gets involved, and they finally have to take care of it. And what I liked about the story was it stood out, I think, big time against a lot of the other stories, where a lot of the other stories in this book are actually sort of G.G. Allen saves the world, G.G. Allen against another creature, being supervillain, where this one just was crazy, and all it did was stand out to explain why G.G. Allen has a small penis. And I think that focusing in on that little aspect of the G.G. Allen-ness of the man was kind of smart.
I really like that story too. For me, it was a little bit of the craziness of their, like, he's like, I have this problem. What are we going to do? And Merle's like, I've got an idea. And the next thing you know, like, like they're performing on a stage and like people are having drinks. And it took me a page or two to be like, holy shit, they're actually partying inside G.G. Allen's cock. Like,
that, yeah, it really reads. You're sort of like going, what the hell's going on, until the very end, until the payoff. And then that's like when it hits you, like, wow, that was pretty brilliant.
Can we talk about how, let's talk about the government side of things. So not only do they understand that G.G. Allen's dick is this massive and ever-growing nightclub, but they have a solution for it, and it's ready to go. Did anybody think that was a little bit, like, crazy? Like, the government knows how to take care of a giant, massive, ever-expanding dick nightclub.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way until you just said it. But could you guys not, the way it was written, picture the old, you know, like the old 60s, like giant ants movie or whatever, like that type
totally.
Like, they like cordon off the area and there's helicopters everywhere and there's like the one general who's ready to give the order.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Played out that. Yeah. And yeah, maybe a little odd now that you mention it, that they do. There's this STD. And the best part of that story is the end where he's like, I'm going to find that bitch. Like that was like the whole rest of the story. Like, wait till I find that hoe.
Like,
I had an opportunity to hang out with Nick Catto past year, and he's nothing if not a big time kind of movie buff, but like old movie, 70s movie, cult classic, that kind of thing. So when you say that it reminds you of like the 60s kind of weird ant monster movie, that's exactly like what Nick Catto would write.
The only thing that would have made me respect the story a little bit more is if, like, because it was basically a giant hypodermic needle, but they didn't say what was in the needle. Like, if it was just, like, a massive round of antibiotics or something like that, I would have been like, all right, that's fucking hilarious. He didn't
now
quite go
I
that far.
Now I can buy the story.
That would have been like, all right, I'm sold.
Rob, what's your round out? What's your second story?
All right. We talked about Bored with Brutality by M.P. Johnson. Really dug that one. This is kind of timely because right before we started recording the podcast, the author of my story tweeted at us about how he was nervous to be an author that was following an episode where we talked about Matt Bell. Right? So the story, my other and probably the story I think I liked the most in the entire book was San G.G. By Gabino Iglesias, where essentially there's this prisoner in a prison, obviously, who is kind of weird to the other prisoners and stuff like that. And essentially what happens is, not too long into the story, all the prison guards start kind of morphing into these monsters, kind of werewolfy, weird, giant, murderous monsters. And this prisoner, kind of the protagonist of the story, is called the Cuban in prison. And he's got all these tattoos all over his body. And some of them, when they're described, kind of invoke what, if I remember correctly, isn't it like G.G. Allen and like a giant pile of bodies or something like that? Can you back me up on that?
Yes, the tattoo. Yes.
Sounds right.
Okay, cool. So he starts, he does this ritual, which involves, I think, blood, feces, and I think to finish off the ritual, it also involves him masturbating onto this kind of like blood and feces pentagram he created to summon, like basically what I would consider like almost like a patron saint, who is G.G. Allen, who he brings, he summons him to battle these weird prison guards, but at the same time, spoilers, springs him from jail. Overall, it was just kind of a cool story, and I like the way it was written. It was interesting, and it was like was talked about earlier. It was kind of a departure. Frank said a lot of it was Gigi was saving the world, or you know, he was a messiah, or something like this. And this was more like a kind of a one-off story where it was just Gigi in a different form doing something, and I thought it worked really well.
Definitely a standout story. Conceptually, I thought that Gigi Allen being the like patron saint of the prison population was probably one of the best concepts in this whole book. I mean, I really like this one too.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree again. San Gigi was, you know, one of those ones you struggled about picking your top ones. Definitely a standout story and a very quotable story, I think, in this book. I think I might have been, you know, the top quoting story or the second most quoted story.
Word.
My second choice is Tipsy Motherfucker by Joel Kaplan. And I want to address something both of you have said, because I think that, and just not to give listeners the wrong idea, in this one, G.G. Allen plays a somewhat hero. He's employed by the government to kill the president of Egypt, who's about to... Two things, I guess, that come to mind. First of all, almost every single story, as I'm looking through the list, has a supernatural element to it, or and I'm going to include like aliens in supernatural context. The second thing is, with him saving humanity and stuff, in almost all of them, he always does it in a very self-serving way. So almost by accident, or more saving humanity, is to piss somebody off. So in this one, he's again kind of a hero. He has to go to Egypt. The president of Egypt is about to employ some magic of some sort to take over the world, and his job is to kill him. But the scope of this story is so crazy, because there he is in the desert. He's being sent by the American government to take care of the situation. He fights Egyptian ninjas. I think that might be, of all the things I read, it's probably one of the more far-fetched ideas, and absolutely wonderful. The payoff in this is was mentioned again in the synopsis. He does return to the White House to collect his bounty for doing this job, and that just gets nuts. I'm going to read some sections of that in the quote section, I think. But it was fucking brilliant. I loved it. I goddamn love this story.
Frank, I'm going to let you go first on this one.
Okay. It wasn't one of my top stories, Tipsy Motherfucker, but I also probably quoted this one the most. So while I didn't love it, I loved the lines out of it. I think that's all coming at the end of the story. That was some funny stuff. It was probably the funniest story, I think, in the book.
I think for me, it was just such a stretch to think of the bushes in the way that they're depicted.
I can tell you nobody except for Joel Kaplan has ever thought of the bushes in the way they're depicted.
Yeah, until we read this story, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yes, exactly.
He showed us a whole different side of George and Barbara.
the underside of George and Barbara. We've been keeping this so clean too. Like we've been doing a really good job, guys. I'm proud of us.
I want to point out how like non-book spear and bullshit Frank is acting through this whole thing, and I'm wondering, like, are we holding you down, man? Or do you need to kind of self-express? You can do what you want.
No, I'm good. I don't, you know, me and my partner Jeff we bounce off each other hard. So maybe it'd have been a different episode if he was involved in this too, but you know, I don't wanna off put the book listeners neither.
All right. I don't want you to feel like you have to, you know, put yourself in a cage for us.
No, and I don't feel that way.
Great, good. All right, in that spirit, Frank, we're going to let you round off before we see if we can decide on an anthology winner with your final standout story from this book.
Okay, my number two pick, since being number two in this anthology actually makes you number one.
Well done. Thank you.
I'm picking There's a Little Gigi in All of Us by the one and only Mr. Kevin Strange. This one I loved. I kind of already enjoy Kevin Strange's work. So maybe I'm a bit inclined to have a preference towards him. But I still think this story really stood out the best for me because it was, I think, the most full-on Gigi Allen display in the book. This was basically giant robots walk the earth now. I forgot what the reason is. All humanity crumbles and they can't live outside and they all make giant humanoid robots. And there's like, it's basically like Judge Dredd and Mega Cities, only they're robots instead of cities. And they basically start fighting one another. And then it comes to the point where the little people living inside the giant robots start coming out of the mouth and having a battle amongst themselves. Only one of the giant robots is actually completely full of Gigi Allens, because the only way the population of these robots replicate themselves is with a cloning machine. So of course, in the Gigi Allen giant robot, the cloning machine has gone haywire because I think Gigi Allen crapped all over it and plugged it up and it went haywire. So now you got a giant robot full of Gigi Allens fighting another giant robot, and they're just a million Gigi Allens flinging poo and just like dive bombing and throwing Gigi Allens and attacking the other robot with tiny millions of Gigi Allens. And if anybody knows anything about Kevin Strange, he loves to take a big giant being, and make him out of millions and thousands of smaller versions of the being. That's like his trademark. And he did a little bit with this, only used robots. But I think it was almost overboard with the Gigi Allen stuff. I mean, he covered everything. And then since there's millions of them, it wasn't just one Gigi Allen pooping all over the place. It was millions of Gigi Allens pooping all over the place and throwing at, and cutting open their heads and flinging blood. And it was just over the top Gigi Allen. Love the story. A lot of fun.
I want to say that, I don't know if you guys will agree with me after I say this, or you thought about it independently on your own, but when I was reading that, it invoked for me the scene from, I want to say Evil Dead 2, where there's all those little Ashes, you know, Ash, the main character, like there's the little ones and he's fighting them and they're attacking him at the windmill. That's Evil Dead 2, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That's totally the scene that I was thinking of when I was reading this. Anybody else agree with me on that?
I
can see that now. What you're talking about. Yeah.
Because it's got kind of a more comedy approach, but it still, you know, incorporates the serious things that character would do. So that's totally what I thought about.
The little Gigi Allens were brilliant. I've not seen Evil Dead 2, so I can't say. I was thinking more like Lilliputians. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, I tried to watch it the other night. And I fell asleep right after Ash's girlfriend is killed. I think that's like 9 minutes into the movie.
Oh, wait, you know what? It might be Army of Darkness, but either way, I'm so disappointed in you.
It's on my list. I just tried watching it last week. I want to see it because Ash versus Evil Dead looks cool, so I figure I should get the backstory. So it's on my list. Lilliputians, for some reason, Gilligan is what I kept thinking, but they were so fucking entertaining, and Frank's right, because there were like hundreds of or thousands of them or whatever, and in some way, I don't know if I was supposed to picture them as like being actual humans that were in giant robots. I was picturing them as really small people inside robot-sized humans or human-sized robots, if that makes sense, which makes them even more endearing because now they're little, like, I don't know, like quarter-inch Gigi Allens running around doing all the horrible things Gigi Allen does. Very, very endearing.
I mean, they did say the robots were 50 stories high, but...
I know, but I was... picturing them as all regular-sized Gigi Allens, for me, doesn't work. They're much bigger for little ones.
the story starts out where it's not revealed that the giant robots are actually giant. You're kind of led to believe they're regular size humans mm-hmm. until like the little tiny ones pop out of their nose or their mouth. And that's when the story kind of pulls back and explains itself about them being giant 50 story tall robots.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I got it in the story, but in my head, I was still picturing that this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. I think what's cuter? That's because the way the story's laid out in the beginning, it's kind of hard to make that switch.
It starts out great, too, because Gigi goes to the doctor because he's constipated, and Gigi can't be constipated because that's his thing, right?
Right, yep.
Like, he's got to be able to shit things. And in multiple stories, it's not just shitting on something. It's projectile shitting. Like, it's a weapon for him in at least 4 or 5 of these stories. It's not just a bodily function. It's his superpower.
Oh, Brilliant. It is.
Brilliant.
Is it? All right, I have a question about the author. Is his name legitimately Kevin Strange?
No.
Okay. I don't know if that's like a secret or anything, but it would just seem very coincidental that that was his name if he wrote such strange things.
No, that's just his working name. He is Kevin, though.
His real name's Strange Kevin.
Strange Kevin.
Okay, because of my bias against the stories in general, because I made that disclaimer, the content not necessarily for me, we're gonna do this a little bit differently, where Livius and Frank are gonna arrive at what would be the anthology winner story of the book, and I'm just gonna go ahead and agree with them for the sake of making the podcast work.
Sake of not taking completely off the rails, yep. Frank, I nominate Bored with Brutality.
Bored with Brutality. Now that's a good pick, but it's also, I mean, is it fair? He's one of the, you know, the editors, and it was like a bonus track. Is that really a qualified contestant?
That's a little controversial. A little bit controversial.
I thought about that, it's a Gigi Allen story.
You're not nominating Bath Salt Fetus. I'm shocked.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the other stories too. I guess before, let's see if we can through the course maybe of quotes and talking about some other stories. Let's see if we can arrive at some kind of natural conclusion, right?
Fair enough.
Bath Salt Fetus. Where's my phone? This conversation that Rob and I had.
I knew this was coming up. So
I knew it was coming.
I just knew it.
Rob got a little bit of a late start reading this, mostly because I think that he was just horrified at the fact that he had to do this. So I'm not going to read that. Okay. So
yeah, I literally did anything else I could to avoid reading this book. No offense to anybody involved. Just saying.
Rob sends me a message at 11:30 last night. So less than 24 hours ago. Story 3 done. Essentially don't want this to be talked about on the podcast. So my response is, come on, we did Backdooring the Brat, which was, I'm going to elaborate for anybody who didn't hear it. We reviewed a couple of short erotica stories. One of them was called Backdooring the Brat.
Backdooring the Bat would have been way cooler. Would it have been like Bruce Wayne and shit?
I was thinking about the brat.
Oh, like a bratwurst?
Yeah.
That doesn't make it. Oh, like
the conversation we had earlier. Yeah.
All right.
So that was an incest story about a stepdaughter who tries to seduce her stepfather. So I said, come on, we did Backdooring the Brat. This isn't that much worse. And Rob's response was, I just read a story where a pregnant girl performed her own abortion and then tore the fetus apart with her teeth. That.
Bath salt fetus.
Yeah, and then I'm not going to, I made a comment after that I'm not going to read it for the podcast, but bath
whoa,
salt
whoa,
fetus.
Whoa, hang on. You're not the only one. I've got this text conversation, too.
I'll tell you what I said. I said, yeah, them Puerto Ricans are something else. The girl's Puerto
Racism
Rican.
Racism is established on this podcast. You don't have to worry about that. I'm sorry, your racism.
So that's the conversation we had about this. And that story is Bath Salt Fetus. So I can tell you that that's probably not a nominee based on Rob's feeling about that story. Now, to be fair, here's what that story is about. This this woman takes a drug that makes her absolutely crazy. And I think in similar scope to another story, I'm pretty sure that drug had some Gigi Allen in it somehow. You guys disagree with that? It's never really established what it was, but she goes nuts, and basically any type of pain that she inflicts on herself becomes sexual gratification, like is sexually very stimulating to her. And then at one point, you know, I don't know, I pictured him a little bit like Cupid is pictured in things, but like a little G.G. Allen that's like following her around.
He was like an aborted fetus, though.
Well, yeah, but he was cute, right? Have you ever seen the Cartman Cupid on South Park? Do you guys know what I'm talking about? No?
No.
All
right.
I got you.
That's how I pictured, like a little G.G. Allen, like just following her around, like little Cupid wings, like telling her to do shit.
Yeah, like when they CGI like a grown-up's head on a little baby body, that type of thing.
Exactly.
So...
That's why I realized I was a little desensitized, because I was like, yeah, and that was my response basically to Rob's questioning of the content of that story.
Yeah, like, what did you expect in a G.G. Allen literary tribute?
Other stories you guys want to mention? Anything that comes to mind?
You know, I liked The Ultimate Shock. That was G.G. against the werewolf.
Again, a great concept.
Yeah, just and it was like I challenge you to a duel live on stage type of a throwdown. That was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Okay, you got nothing you want to talk about?
Actually, a lot of horror space. I am gonna say something. I have to give some props to the GG effect by Jeff Burke, just because it was a very unique idea where. And I'm going to spoil the story a little bit, but essentially, like, if you think about it, if you kind of step back from what the story was and just think about the overall story, it's kind of brilliant in a way, because he basically has this, like, person who is the alternate universe. G.G. Allen grew up in a normal life and became a good person. Not a good person, because that's kind of casting judgments on actual G.G. Allen, but had kind of a normal life. And he became this person who eventually contributed to the end of the world. And so he had created a way to go back in time and try and fix that. But no matter what he did, if he had a normal life, he still ended up contributing to the end of the world. And so he decided to go back further until he affected his father's life, to give his father a bad life, to see if that changes the outcome of the world. And essentially the moral of the story was like, G.G. Allen has to be G.G. Allen that we know in order for the world to not end. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I totally, when I read that one, you know, I like the story. I love the Groundhog Day sort of aspect to it, like you just explained. But I thought the only problem with that was almost from the get-go, there was only one logical conclusion about the way that story was going to end. So, you know, it was fun and it was smart what he did, but it was also like, you know, you knew what was going to happen. It was really, the Titanic.
Yeah, telegraphed the ending of that one, right?
Yeah.
I was really kind of surprised at how much space there was, outer space. So yeah. we get the pooping and we get the drugs and we get the violence and all that, because if you know anything about G.G. Allen, that's really what it was. Like the term like blood, shit, and cum came up in at least like maybe five stories, like just like that. So, you know, those are all to be really expected. I didn't expect that much outer space. It's got to be like five stories, right?
At least three. Definite outer space.
So there's Dream Quest for Dope, which, by the way, was brilliant and a perfect example of what I was saying is G.G. winds up saving humanity. And, you know, spoiler alert, he basically does it because he's pissed off at someone who was supposed to have heroin for him and didn't. So he doesn't give a shit about humanity, but he's like, I'm going to totally fuck up your plans just because I really wanted this heroin that you had and you tricked me into coming here to get it. And there's no heroin. So fuck you. Like, that's kind of how he saves humanity in a lot of these stories and the ones that he does, I think. Yeah, there's, AP 3498.
That was good. That felt like reading, like, Space Odyssey, 2001 Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. me, there wasn't that many. Why am I stuck on the fact that there was a lot of outer space in this?
Even the Dream Quest for Dope, that was more like a Lovecraft type of story, I think, than a sci-fi feel.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it does travel. It's outer space. But yeah, I think you're right. Almost like alternate dimension. All right, never mind. In my outer space, I apparently have G.G. Allen in outer space on my fucking brain.
I have to give
it. There were the two right at the end.
Yeah, Frank's right, though. That Dream Quest for Dope is straight up. There is a character out of the Lovecraftian world or whatever that is, yeah, in there. So, yeah. Yeah, but the last two before the bonus tracks, totally spacey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. The one Harry Houdini makes an appearance, the final flight of the Chrysanthemum Byzantium.
Yeah.
Not only a second appearance from John Wayne Gacy, but Harry Houdini and a more immortal G.G. Allen. So lots of great overall for me, a lot of great concepts. I'll be really honest. There was one story I really flat out disliked, and there was another one I didn't understand. Beyond that, I enjoyed all the rest of them. So.
Yeah, I agree. There was that one story. I don't know if we're on the same page, but there was that one story. It just seemed like you didn't even have the character right. The way I was reading it, I'm like, what are you doing? It didn't make sense.
Let's go off the record for a second. All right. We didn't want to call somebody out on that, but Frank and I are on the same page about the one story we didn't like. I will say that. And then there was one I
coincidentally, me too.
Oh, well, yeah. And then there was one I just didn't understand. Flat out just didn't. Like, I finished it. I thought about it. I was like, maybe I should go back and reread it. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. Other than that, you know, so I don't know. I guess we have to at least make one more attempt at an anthology winner. So if I don't want to take MP Johnson out of the running, but I guess if you guys, I'll defer to you guys. If you think that being the editor doesn't, I guess the whole thing is that being the editor doesn't, he wasn't able to make his story any better. He's the editor. It was his job to make all of them better. You know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah. You know, I'm not against that. You know, I think the three
two
of us could probably come together and agree that that's the best.
Oh, so choose another one.
If he's going to be one of them, choose like a runner up then, because that would be fair, right? Because he can't be both of them.
That's true. That's true. I don't know, Frank, nominate a runner up.
Man. I mean, as far as all three of us concerned, I can totally go with San Gigi. If you're in for that, unless you just want to,
conceptual,
mine crosses over with yours.
I don't know. I like San Gigi. That was probably going to be third or fourth for me, I think.
Agreed.
So I'm going to go with. I'm okay with that. And Rob, it was one of Rob's standouts. So we can make Rob vote. He doesn't even have to say anything, but he can contribute to this because he already kind of committed on that one.
Yeah.
So
I mean, if he's down with it, it must be good.
All right.
No, that's not necessarily the case, because remember, this wasn't about what I liked, so maybe I was dead wrong on all of these.
No, I don't think so. I think as a story, you know, you're the least G.G. Allen of the three of us, so as just a story, the fact that, you know, even you appreciate this in a book full of stuff you just don't connect with, I think that says a lot about the story.
I think Frank... iron that out for us. So here it is officially. We are nominating. So the anthology winner, I guess, wouldn't be nominating anymore. It's going to be Bored with Brutality by MP Johnson. But in the event that the rules that we create as we go are wrong and we cannot include him because he is the editor for non-bonus tracks, we have San Gigi by Gabino Iglesias.
Hey.
There it is.
I feel I'll so accomplished because those were my two stories.
I will. God damn.
So fuck you guys.
It's almost like Frank and I talked about this off the air and wanted to pick your two stories.
Oh, you sons of bitches. You didn't do that, did you?
No.
I didn't even realize they were both yours until you said it, to be honest. Gabino did the 206045 was the number that was written on the wall. That was what basically Gabino had to, or I'm sorry, that was what the Cuban had to do. Gigi was like, you know what you have to do, and that was written on the wall at the end. Am I remembering that correctly?
You are.
Yes.
Yeah, that's from a G.G. Allen song, which is cool because it wasn't used. There were a lot of G.G. Allen song titles throughout this book, probably ones I didn't even catch. But I like that one. I like that placement because it's actually from a G.G. Allin song called My Prison Walls. So there you go. Extra bonus points for pulling something like that out.
All right. I think it's time for quotes, as much as I hate to think about that. I think it's that time. But before we do that, I just want to say that on my computer right now, the two Wikipedia pages that I have pulled up are John Wayne Gacy and Hillary Clinton. And I don't think many books would cause me to do that.
Well, there you go. Frank, you're our guest. Would you like to kick it off with the first quote?
Sure. Let's start out with one I have from The Ultimate Shock. It is, rage boiled up through Gigi's rectum to the top of his greasy pate, infusing him with molten determination.
Love it. Rob's just going to sit quietly through this. Rob, do you have quotes too?
I don't have any that highlight like the good writing of any of the stories, so you can just go ahead without me.
Oh no, Rob. Do you have any that are just really fucking foul?
No, I think that when I highlighted stuff, I focused on like typos and consistency errors in the plot and stuff like that, so I really won't be constructive in the quotes at all, I'm being 100% honest.
All right. Mine is from Kentucky Fried Christ, my first one. I just live how I want. This is Gigi talking. I just live how I want. Gigi poured Jack Daniels in his eye. That's fucking beautiful.
Can you get drunk from drinking through your eyeball?
I have no idea, but it's so great after I just live how I want and then just doing it in such a weird, weird way.
I mean, I've been ingesting alcohol the traditional way, but now you piqued my interest.
All right. Smartass. Then this one's for you. The sewage pissed out of him like a soup of coffee and opium tar, inundating John Wayne as if with sacred light.
Moving. Definitely moving.
Something was moving. It was Gigi's bowels, apparently.
Yes.
So gross. And I'm telling you guys, I don't make this up. I had lunch in my car for probably the second time in like 2 months, and that's the story I read. And I was just giddy. With it. So Frank, I guess it's back to you. Rob is going to not do quotes.
He's gonna decline. Okay. I'm gonna bring up one from Bad Salt Fetus to maybe paint a better picture of what we were talking about before. She expected it to be lying there, dead as fuck, purple and covered in flies. Instead, it was sitting down, umbilical cord wrapped around its body like its fucked up meat toga that led to her vagina, clearly alive and far more familiar than she could have imagined.
Yeah, that's some pretty graphic writing there. And you got to give credit where credit's due. It's probably not easy to pull off a line like that, to write it and actually have it sound like something. I mean, once you get past the kind of nastiness. This one is from, I wish my notes worked a little better, Dream Quest for Dope. The guy still on the ground started giggling. Dude, G.G. Allin just broke a fucking bottle over my head. That rules. And I could see a G.G. Allin fan being excited about having a bottle broken over their head by a legend like that.
I got one from my favorite story. There's a little G.G. in all of us, sort of to illustrate the over-the-top amount of GGs going on in the story. Then another GG shattered a beer bottle on an incisor and proceeded to run down the line, castrating each of the jerking GGs. The maimed GGs leaned back and pointed their nubby stumps in the air, showering the doctor in dick blood.
When you said that, I think you said that was one of the most quotable stories. I agree, because I think I have probably tied between that and MP Johnson story. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to take a step back from that. Just probably the page before. This is one of the little GGs. I eat shit and whiskey and whatever the fuck I want. What the fuck is it to you, motherfucker? You want me to eat your shit? I fucking will, asshole. Fucking motherfucker. Fuck you. Awesome. Yeah. Little GGs. Yep.
Okay. Because of that quote specifically, I want you to know that I've been searching for words to see how often they appear in the book. Any guesses on the word fuck? Bearing in mind, this book is, it's listed on Amazon to be 190 pages, but I don't know if that's really accurate. Any guesses on how often the word fuck appears in the book?
I think I just said it 4 or 5 times in one sentence. I'm going to go with 128.
Frank, any thoughts?
I think that's low ball. I got to go. It's got to be up around 400.
301 times. Jesus. 301 times. In a 190-page book.
Frank, you got more? I could do this all night. Okay.
Oh, absolutely. I got one from our runner-up winner, San Gigi. San Gigi dropped his pants, stepped out of them, and screamed. A massive turd flew out of his ass like a bullet and perforated one of the creature's chests, lifting the creature off its huge feet and dropping it like a trash bag full of old noodles.
I have that same quote. See, I knew we'd be on the same page.
That's literary.
There is, the story is called, that's not what it's called. This is from a story called, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, The Coprophagus. Does that sound right to either one of you guys?
Coprophagus or something like that.
Right? Yeah, maybe that one. Whatever that is.
Coprophagia is the act of eating one's own feces.
Nice. We didn't talk about that story, but it's G.G. Nice. Allen. Yeah. There's a name for it, which means it happens enough, right? Like something has to happen often enough for it to have a title, I think. Right? No? Am I wrong?
Yes. Dogs eat their own shit all the time.
Since you're asking that, I will tell you that I did keep track of how many times someone ate feces in this book. And I was surprised that it was only 4 times that I caught. I thought it was going to be far more than that.
Wow.
Was it ever not G.G. Allen?
Yeah, one time it was demons.
Oh, okay.
Demons at one point were eating feces.
It makes perfect sense, I guess.
One demon was pooping into another demon's mouth, to be specific.
This story was also interesting in that G.G. Allen is a very kind of classic sin eater, which we've seen in lots of different literature and stuff. So I'm not going to go into what that consists. But the interesting thing about this story was that all of it was factual backdrop from like 1992 and 93, and this is leading up to his death. So there's a lot of things that happened news-wise, and I didn't realize what a memorable couple years that was. That strike you guys like you recognized all those things that happened in that small time frame?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, I think a note I had made on that story was like, this is Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire with shit in it.
That is a surprisingly apt summary of what just happened in that book. That is, I have nothing to add to that. That's perfect.
Oh, my quote, my favorite part of this was, I have to flip back a little bit to this. In March of 1992, the Sin Eater visited the Den of the Trickster, a media manipulator who sought to turn the public against its own self-interest. The being called Geraldo by some was just another agent of chaos. Which was his appearance on the Geraldo Rivera show, but I thought that painted Geraldo in an accurate light for me, at least.
No love for Geraldo from you, huh?
Fuck Geraldo.
Oh shit. Okay. All right. Fair.
Was that Geraldo Rivera or Rico Suave Geraldo?
I'm pretty sure that was Geraldo Rivera.
Oh, okay.
The other guy's cool. I emulate the other one.
No comment.
I'm going to go ahead and take a quote from that tipsy motherfucker story. The first lady piss made Gigi's little cock throb, and President Bush dropped to the floor and started sucking it like the solution to the national debt was in Gigi's balls.
Now, Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, a literary tribute to G.G. Allen. Yes, Livius.
I'm going to pretend like I have a great memory, but I do remember a quote from 65 Stirrup Iron Road that was, she sucked cock like it held the cure for cancer. And you went on a very eloquent and passionate kind of soliloquy about how much you like it when statements like that are made. Did that also occur to you when you were reading this?
No. It escaped me in this instance, but I do know what you're talking about. like, yeah, because, all right, so another example would be, I know that in the story, the David James Keaton story, Nine Cops Killed for a Goldfish Cracker, he said something about how a cop who had been shot was crawling to a storm drain, like it held the answer or something like that. So, yeah, I like quotes like that. I'm not going to lie, but I must have missed it this time. I apologize.
It's the exact same one you referenced, almost in those exact words on that episode.
It's true. I'm not going to back down from something I said.
While we're in Tipsy Motherfucker, I've got a couple really short ones from that. The sun went down fast like most of the transsexual hookers Gigi knew. I like that.
most, not all. Most of them.
Gigi followed an old scumfuck tradition and pushed a small bottle of Jim Beam out of his ass and had a swig. It was always happy hour in his asshole. Fucking brilliant. Goddamn brilliant.
I knew so. You, like, there's, it's one of those things, you know someone long enough, mm-hmm. and you know what they're going to react to, and I knew that you were going to like that one. I just knew it.
The president of Egypt is prepared for something to happen, like Gigi Allen showing up. So this wall opens and there's all these naked women in there. There are 40 naked women of all ages on their backs, all masturbating, and each one of their stomachs had a needle full of heroin on it. And then this is the paragraph after that. Gigi stopped in his tracks, staring at the sea of dripping cunts and needles. Fat pussy, skinny pussy, big clit, long lip pussy, pussy of every color and flavor. The sweet nectar flowed free upon the temple floor. Gigi wanted to stick his tongue inside every one of them and stick every needle right into his main line, but he had to finish the mission first.
Yeah, I had that one.
It's fucking brilliant.
Is main line? What is a main line?
Yeah, I don't know. So. I don't do heroin.
I thought
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Not. I'm going to have to assume that's injecting something right into a vein, right?
Yeah.
Right, yeah, I've never heard of it as a noun. I thought it was like mainlining was like, I don't know. I just, that one threw me off, but that's Hold just on. Me being nitpicky. Are you going to search for it?
Yeah, I'm going to Urban Dictionary this. To inject a drug, usually heroin, into a vein, also used to refer to the drug itself.
So it's not the vein. It's not like a special vein that you have. Mm-mm, and that's how I read it.
I think it's the difference between, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's the only way you can do. I guess you could smoke heroin, right?
Sure.
I guess getting it directly into your bloodstream is the you know, better, quote unquote, better way, worse way. Whatever, the more efficient way to get a drug. I don't know. Heroin listeners, if you've got something
for any of our heroin users out there, can you please clarify this and we'll talk about it.
Reach out anonymously. We'll credit you anonymously.
Considering the content of this book, you might actually get a larger reply.
Yep. Frank, what else you got?
I got one more. It's from Bored with Brutality. Kind of sets up what the whole story is. He'd punched, he'd pooped, he'd bled, he'd fucked rock, he fucking rocked. He'd spent a decade outraging to the fullest extent possible, and now it just made him yawn. He couldn't even shoot heroin and shit in some whore's mouth while jerking off two faggots without falling asleep. To be fair, it was really good heroin.
Yeah, that was... There's so much good in that story. That's why I didn't want to disqualify this from winning. I have a couple, and then we'll call it. I'll do a fairly short one. This one was kind of insightful. He is able to get a job working for a multinational tech corporation after he assumes somebody's identity. It was very normal. Most of his work entailed sending emails, telling people to check with other people to find out what to tell different people to do in order to get something done. It was easy. You guys ever worked at a place that's kind of somebody's job was to do something like that?
Yep.
So that's why it spoke. So I'm going to read this. This is a little longer, and this is my favorite scene in the whole book. And this is where I hope like my mom doesn't decide to start listening to the podcast again. Gigi Allen, through his normalcy in Bored with Brutality, meets a girl and, you know, he starts doing the like dating thing with her, and he's smart enough to kind of let her lead because he's not really sure what normal is at all. So this, he gets the part where he's having sex with her. they're well into the sex at this point. They maneuvered so he was on top. After she came, he squatted over her chest. He grunted, trying to squeeze a shit onto her boobs, but without his usual pre-fuck laxative, all he got was a turtle head. "What are you doing?" she asked, perhaps a little frightened. That was all he needed to hear to know that shitting on a girl's tits post-sex wasn't the usual thing. "Just kidding," he said. He supposed that meant she wouldn't be shitting in his mouth either. Bummer.
Yeah, I was totally going to quote that, but I was too busy jerking off to that part.
Yeah, that's a little later down the page. I have highlighted in during the same act. Actually, this whole paragraph's worth it.
Did you say this whole paragraph's worth it?
Yeah, yeah. So continuing right from the bummer of her not shitting in his mouth, then he jerked off into her mouth, and for some reason she was totally okay with that. Wasn't cum grosser than shit? He was going to have a hard time understanding normal versus abnormal when it came to sexy stuff, he realized. He decided to forego cutting open his scrot for now. And then marriage.
Yeah, that whole part for me there really illustrates what I felt about the story, where, like, you're looking at normal as the weird now. After going through this whole book and all this messed up stuff, that really shows the flip of what normal is.
Yeah, and I have to imagine for somebody like Gigi, and now I'm, you know, we're going to talk about a guy who's dead and can't answer for himself, but as all the fucked up shit day in and day out and all the drugs and everything else, I have to imagine there's a part of him that maybe kind of lost sight of what, you know, what normal is. And I think that played really well in the story, although it was very tongue-in-cheek in most parts. I have to imagine for someone who's that, I don't even want to say fucked up, that disturbed, you know,
removed from reality.
Yeah, that might be a little hard to play the game the normal way. So, yeah, great story and great quotes. I loved all of those.
Yeah,
Rob.
Yeah,
I totally think that you should start the wrap up.
How did I just? I just had a feeling that you were going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I will start this wrap up by again stating the fact that the content of this book was just not my thing. So any kind of judgments I make, probably, most likely, in most cases, maybe not all, are judgments more based on the fact that I'm not into the subject material than any judgments against the writing itself. That being said, I just wasn't into it. There were some good points. There were some points where I literally, and Olivius was reading from our text conversation before, and I'm just going to bring up one other thing that I did text Olivius, where I said, "I've read two stories. Halfway through the first, considered what an episode would sound like where one of us refused to finish the book." And that was basically, I just didn't gel with the subject material. Not my thing. I don't have any kind of fan appreciation of Gigi Allen, so the overall idea behind the book just wasn't up my alley in any way. That being said, there were some really, you know, well-written moments. There were some moments I thought, you know, weren't as polished as they could have been. My judgment of this book is going to highly base on the fact that it just wasn't for me. That being said, I'm going to be really generous on this one. 2 stars.
That's more stars than I thought it was going to get from you. So, Frank, would you like to follow that up with a wrap up?
Sure. I think in this situation, I am in the middle on the opinion of Gigi Allen. I came to the show without really having an appreciation for what his music was until I got involved with doing this book. So, I also think that I'm a little more accepting of this crazy debauchery than Rob might be. But I don't think Rob should be so apologetic about, you know, not liking the book, not connecting with the book. That's fair. This book is not going to be for everybody. This book's really going to be for people who are fans of Gigi Allen, people who are fans of punk rock music. Not everybody's going to identify with this book. And if you aren't a fan of Gigi and you aren't a fan of this really extreme punk rock, you're probably not going to enjoy the book. So That being said, if you are somebody who can come to the table and appreciate this type of content, you are going to enjoy the book. I found myself, if I read more than three stories in a shot, it became rough. That crapping and bleeding story after story kind of really becomes a little too much if you take it in too much chunks at once. So I had to kind of break it up. And for that reason, you know, this is not the greatest book in the world, but if you can get behind it, I'm going to give it 3 stars. It's an enjoyable enough book if you can appreciate the material.
All right. I really figured this is how it was going to play out with for right in the order we're doing them. You know, I've been fascinated with the persona of Gigi Allen, and although I would never run around naked outdoors or, you know, defecate in public on people or in front of people, I saw Gigi Allen urinate into a cup and then swish it around in his mouth and kind of spew it at members of the audience, okay? And I was kind of fascinated with the kind of person who could do these kind of things. You know, was he deranged? Yes. Was he maybe mentally not as fit as everybody else? Yeah, probably. I can't imagine someone in their right mind carrying on like this, but I always found him to be a fascinating character. So I don't know that I'm a fan of Gigi Allen, the musician. I don't know that I can say that. I can say that I'm very interested in Gigi Allen, the person. And I was very excited. Rob has made no secret of this. I basically forced this book on him for the podcast in the self-interest of being able to read it and talk about it with some other people. I think that the vast majority of the writers did a great job kind of elevating the Gigi legend through this with just a couple of exceptions. There's one story that kind of just made me angry when I read it, and I'm not going to go negative and talk about that story anymore, just to say that I really think it portrayed Gigi in a poor and very unfair light. The rest of them I found at least enjoyable. You know, I kept thinking to myself, I don't know Gigi Allen. I you know, like I said, I saw him once and I know his music and I've seen interviews with him and stuff. But I'm thinking, if Gigi Allen was able to read this, what would he think of these stories? And I think he would get a kick out of the majority of them, kind of elevating just what he was and just making it kind of bigger and broader. And I guess in a tribute, that's really what happens. If we watch a tribute to a musician that's passed on or whatever, we take all the best parts of them, right? And we make them, you know, we push them forward, and you see the funniest moments of Robin Williams' career or whatever in some type of tribute or something like that. And I almost feel like that's what happened here. So I'm going to give MP Johnson a lot of credit for choosing the right stories for the most part. I'm going to give the authors credit for some super really creative concepts that Gigi Allen is not the easiest person, I think, to tell big stories about. And I think that most of them really hit the nail on the head. That being said, Rob and Frank are both right in saying that, yeah, this isn't for everybody. I would say I would direct this to anybody who has a interest in Gigi Allen. If you're a fan, absolutely, you should read this. If you had a morbid fascination like I did, you should read this. And I think that people who are really into, I don't know, like the kind of extreme horror / bizarro stuff, you know, kept coming up. You know, I mentioned it several times, 65 Stirrup Iron Road. I think that it was more in that vein as far as kind of a gross stories, you know. So if that's your kind of thing, I definitely think you should read it. I laughed out loud several times, which does not happen all that frequently when I'm reading. I really enjoyed most of these stories, and I'm going to give the whole thing 4 stars.
Livius, you came in a little lower than I expected you to. I'm going to be 100% honest.
Yeah, I like I said, there was a couple stories in there that kind of detracted for me. So
yeah,
you know.
One thing I will say is that, and I think one of the reasons that I sounded like I was more deferential than maybe I otherwise would have been is because I think doing things like this is important, and I think it was a good thing that this book was made, because people should never shy away from topic matter just because, or subject matter just because, you know, it's not universally appealing. So I have to give credit to the editors for making this book happen, even if it wasn't necessarily something that I was into, because these are definitely the type of books that, even if they're not for everybody, it's important that we still see stuff like this on the market.
Well put, sir. Well put. All right.
That's it. Keep reading.
That's it. I can never talk about G.G. Allen again. Was that the deal? Is that?
Yeah. Livia's lost some serious. There's some concessions that Livia's will be making in the future because of this episode, because it wasn't my thing, but we did it because I'm a good sport.
You are a good sport, Rob. So, Frank, what's shaking with books, beer, and bullshit?
Well, we're still going. We're still chugging along at our usual pace of one show every now and again. We just came out with a show earlier.
As 4 hours recording. Ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And that show's been on wax for the better part of a month, really. I got more pressing matters in my life. It's hard to get editing. But we actually have another show on wax, and hopefully it won't take that long to get the next one out after that. But we're still doing our thing. And
I think that let me give listeners a little bit of a rundown of Books, Beer, and Bullshit. It is exactly that in that order. So it's either a book review or an interview or something literary related at the beginning. A bad beer review, right? Like, I mean, you guys look for the worst of the beer.
We try to, yes.
Yeah, and you're pretty successful from the episodes I've heard. It's very rare that that I hear you say something other than, you know, to something. But I'm not much of a beer drinker, and you are doing nothing to further my beer drinking desires with your reviews. So I guess you're doing it the right way, right?
That's good. At the price of my palate, yes, we suffer through it. We drink it so you don't have to.
That's right. And then there's a bullshit section at the end, which is, you know, just general stuff. Some of it, some great content in there. So what drives you? What had you? What? Let's get the backstory. What drove Frank and Jeff to do Books, Beer, and Bullshit?
Basically, we've been doing it for as long as we've been friends, almost. You know, it's really, if you hang out with us, as a lot of our friends often say, is like it's just an episode of Books, Beer, and Bullshit. Jeff is the kind of guy in our circle of friends, and I know you've kind of talked about this too, is like it's hard to find people to talk books with. So Jeff reads a lot of the same things I do, and we talk books very often. And we knew we wanted to do this podcast thing. It sounded fun. So we just kind of said, yeah, well, it'll be about, I don't know, books and beer, and then we'll just bullshit type of thing. And we just kind of hit record, and the show just gelled organically into that. We had no intention of originally drinking bad beers. That just came out of the original conversation we recorded, where we actually did discuss some, I don't know, sweet and sour beer. And it, you know, just riffing on that sounded good, and we decided, well, let's just find bad beer. You can find 100 podcasts out there tasting beer that everybody likes, and that's boring. You know, we're not really a book review podcast. We're not really a beer review podcast. We're an entertainment podcast. I think we just want people to have fun.
I like that. And I think that pretty accurately sums it up. It is definitely entertaining. I'm going to ask a question about this last episode. I didn't get to listen to the whole thing before we did this, but there was a little bit from Jeopardy in there. Did you actually create that?
No. Okay. We run a little skit. We usually grab something off of YouTube or some kind of MP3. We call it our opening act, just a little skit. That's actually something from YouTube. There's only one that we actually did. It was a lot of fun to do. Took us probably about 3 hours to get, but we did a prank phone call on this sort of off guy that Jeff used to work with, and we called him up and we used one of these soundboards from it was clips from Sling Blade.
I remember
got that. Any French fried potatoes? And we were trying to call up like grandparents and people we think would fall for this stuff. Nobody was falling for it, but this one guy did. And he fell for it, hook, line, and sinker, and he started talking about Jesus, which just happened to be all these great quotes about I read the Bible once and all that stuff. And it really fell in perfectly. There was about a 3-hour conversation with this guy that I actually edited down to, I think it was a minute and a half, 2-minute little skit.
Yeah, I remember that, and yeah, a lot of the opening stuff you guys have on there is very, very funny and a nice touch, I might add.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like a warm up act, like we call it, the little opening act, get everybody in the mood.
I got to give it up to the idea of just kind of what you said about an episode of the podcast is like as if you hung out with the two of you, and I think when Livius and I are at our best, you really can't tell the difference between if you were sitting in the room talking to us and if we knew that we were on microphone, because it's just the natural kind of interaction between the two of us is what makes it, you know, fun and cross fingers actually entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just a chemistry. We've heard it bounce back to us about there's just a natural sort of chemistry with me and Jeff, and that helps the show out. That helps the entertainment out. Same thing happens with you guys. You guys just have this sort of natural back and forth that makes it, you know, like we're all sitting in a room with you guys talking about a book. It's not stuffy. It's not structured, so to speak. There's structure to it, but you're just kind of riffing around that structure, and it works. I think it speaks to the longevity and your listener base.
No, I'm going to roll a tear, and it's not about something weird from a book about G.G. Allen.
And then there's the whole other side, Frank Edler, the writer. I see that Brat's in hell.
Brat's?
We're not really sure which way to go with this. Brat's in hell. What's going on with that? You got it shopping around or still working on it?
It's being shopped around, not heavily right now. It's actually with an editor right now. And I think the running joke was I was live editing my bio. Originally, I figured I would have it out by the end of this year. That's just not going to happen. So when I saw your little note about, oh, it's being released late 2015, I crossed that out and said eventually. But yeah, it's going to see the light of day one way or the other. I'm still going to shop it around once I get the edits back. And I mean, we'll see what happens. Eventually, I'm just going to put it out myself if I have to. No big deal. It's my first full-length thing, so I just want everybody to read it.
I've got to give you credit. The patience that's employed in writing, especially something full-length. So, you know, you write a short story. You know, you maybe not spend that much time on it. You shop it around. It gets published in something. But not only is the patience required in writing something that's longer term, but then yeah, that the process, right? So there's editing, there's, you know, seeing about getting it published, and that's what I love about this. There's instant gratification, right, Rob? We're done with this, like, you know, 2 days later it's done and we can move on to the next thing. I think that's why Rob and I could never be successful writers, is the waiting game has got to be really tough.
Well, Livius, for you, once we end the call, you're done. I actually
have to go to sleep. That's what actually happens for me. It's done then. And the end result shows up like the tooth fairy, you know, a couple days later, there's a buck under my pillow or whatever. And it's the form of a podcast that's been published. So, but yeah, I have to imagine that's got to be with having a family and a full-time gig and the podcast and everything. I'm guessing you stay pretty busy.
Yeah. I don't know how I do all this shit or why I do all this shit, but, I do. I have to write. It's one of them, you know, every year everybody say it that writes, but I do, I have to write. And, you know, I got this Brat's in Hell. It's already done. It's got to be edited and all that, but there's still a couple other things I've read. I co-wrote a thing with my pal, Armand Rosamilia. That's being shopped around now. We're writing the second book of it. There's another book I'm going to co-write with another guy. I'm doing a lot of things, but what's frustrating is what I have written is not getting out there. I just want people to read and have fun. But it also looks like I'm doing nothing when behind the scenes I'm writing a lot. So I think that's the frustrating part, is like you're active, but nobody's actively getting to see what you're doing. And that takes a while. And it's, I think you have to be disciplined to roll with that, be patient like that. Cause you have to wait it out and make sure you are putting the best thing out there.
I wish more people were patient and put the best thing out there. There's no way a shot at the book we just listened to, but we have read some books over the years that I'm like, man, This could have done with some editing or just a little more time.
It is. It seems more and more that people are just take advantage of the ease of self-publishing, and I think it's getting worse. I think the glut is just terrible, and nobody's being self-disciplined about what they're putting out there. Everybody thinks they're writers, and it's obnoxious. It's annoying. It's disgusting. And it casts a poor light on publishing.
Shit's getting real in here, ladies and gentlemen.
There we go. Now we're into a real serious conversation about nobody's policing the words that we read.
Motherfuckers.
Pretty much. I'm going to agree with that. But until then, Scared Silly is available for your reading pleasure from Frank and Books, Beer, and Bullshit. So we're going to, as much as we love books, you know, we're going to promote, right, another podcast. You know, we were only allowed, again, through our self-imposed rules, to mention like three other podcasts on this podcast, and yours is one of them. So
we're always smitten when you guys talk about us. Because, like we said, you know, we're the lowbrow little league, and you guys are the highbrow major leagues.
Rob's getting all teary-eyed again.
I appreciate you saying that. I don't know how accurate it is, but we all know how bitter and jealous Livius can be, especially if someone he feels someone is kind of encroaching on his territory. So it is a very big endorsement if he will even mention your podcast on our podcast. So absolutely, I think people should definitely check out Books, Beer, and Bullshit.
Please, we need more than five listeners. I can't even. My co-host doesn't even listen to the show.
Wow, that's well. Let's. I mean, if you want, I can edit that out.
No, he'll tell you he doesn't listen to it. It's fine.
It's odd because I listen. I used to listen every episode, and now I'm probably down to about 50% of the episodes that I listen to. And it all depends. It all depends. Sometimes I listen for different things. Sometimes I listen because I go, "Holy shit, was that episode okay? Did we do okay?" So I have to like listen back and critique the episode that we did, which has got to be
Wait a minute, 50% of our episodes?
Yeah, I listen to about
half. All right, continue.
I listen to 100.
Rob feels my pain.
I listen to 100% of them the first time.
Our episodes, I sit there, we record it, I hear it once, I got to go back for hours on end editing this shit, and then after that, I got to listen to it again, making sure it sounds right.
You and me both, buddy. You and me both.
Yeah, that's right.
God, yeah. Jeff and I should be talking.
Yeah, you two do a podcast together, see how well it comes out.
Yeah, fuck you guys.
Frank, is there anything else you want to plug before we let you go?
No, I'm good.
Right.
Well, before we say goodnight to Frank and everything, I just want to remember, because we totally forgot in our last episode. So we did our Halloween episode last week, and our marketing intern Ryan was nice enough to send us a Halloween themed audio clip about the newsletter and everything, which we entirely forgot to add to that episode. So first of all, major apologies to Ryan. We do appreciate you. We
love you, brother.
Yeah, we do. We do. Absolutely. Yeah,
we do. I know. That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to blame it on Jesse and Amanda.
Well, they're the scapegoats. To be fair, what is like 3 hours we were recording? That went a little bit beyond our.
Well, the finished episode was 2 hours and 12 minutes. So the audio that I had to cut through was over 3 hours. So, it was just rough, and the weird thing is I remembered to edit while I was editing, but by the time I got done with the regular episode, I had forgotten to put it back in, so it just kind of slipped my mind. But again, Ryan did send something Halloween-themed, and since we're technically just a day, when we're recording this, is a day after Halloween, I think this is still relevant. So here is Ryan, our marketing intern, with a little bit about our newsletter and other things.
Hey, this is Ryan McCray, the marketing intern for the Booked podcast. We are still giving away the Booked anthology just for signing up for the newsletter. And that newsletter is like my sex life, something I continually talk about but really haven't done anything with. Since it's Halloween season, I thought I'd share my most scariest moment is when I heard this weird scratching in my bedroom night after night. A couple months went on, and I brought my then-girlfriend to meet my parents, only to find that squirrels had broken into our house and gotten into the walls. They had babies. My dad caught them and was now drowning those squirrel babies in our driveway. So I'd love if just five listeners went to Booked Podcast, and maybe I'll get to be on the show live or even be put on the webpage. And to this day, my father captures squirrels in the backyard, drives to a forest preserve, and lets them go. He's been doing this for 15 years out of guilt for drowning those squirrel babies in front of my girlfriend. This is Ryan. Thanks for listening. And on with the show. Go to bookedpodcast.com. Sign up for the newsletter.
Guys, Ryan is struggling week after week, as you just heard. Sign up for the newsletter, for fuck's sake. At this point, you're not even doing it for us. You're doing it for Ryan. Did you hear? Did you guys listen, right? Rewind, skip back 3 minutes, listen to it again. For fuck's sake, have some decency and some courtesy and sign up for the newsletter. That's all I'm saying.
And save the squirrels, I think, is the... right? Save the squirrels?
Save the squirrels, save the podcast.
Save the squirrels, yeah. You just came up with that now. That's entirely original, right?
Mm-hmm, yep, absolutely.
Save the squirrels, save the podcast.
Frank, thanks again first of all, for reading that book, which, you know, I picked you because you were the least... and actually, you know what? I take that back. I believe it was Rob's suggestion. Did you not suggest Frank as a co-host for that? For this?
Did I?
I'm pretty sure you did.
You know what happened is I saw MP Johnson announce the Kickstarter, and of course, seeing Gigi Allen, Livius was the first person I thought of. And I think you just got so excited. You're like, yeah, we're going to do this, and you're coming with us, motherfucker.
That sounds more accurate. I mean,
or that could have. I was trying to give Rob some credit. I couldn't remember how it went. But thanks for reading the book. And thanks for I know you kept the energy really low to try to match us, so we appreciate you doing this with us.
Yeah, do you want to like Frank out at the end? Do you want to just go nuts?
Yeah, man, I don't want to give all the way gold away to Booked. You know, you got to come over to my podcast and where we just explode and talk about crazy fucking shit. Like we talked about a lot of cereal talk this week, and then we shit on people with South Jersey accents. That was a lot of fun too.
The low hanging entirely fruit. Reasonable to me, yeah.
That's the low hanging fruit. That's
Frank, I was drinking a beer tonight, but it was a good beer, so I don't think it fits your criteria, right?
No, not at all. And you know me, I despise when people tell me they drink beer on my podcast. That's the people who don't get it.
I know, I got called out on that shit on your podcast.
Yeah, you did. That happened to me. Don't do that. It tells me you're not listening. You don't know what the show is about. You know, one time we got hit up in an email from this woman to read her book. And when I researched who the woman was, she was the wife of a senator from California. And I said, holy shit, I should just interview this woman because, you know, you don't know what you're getting into. And I'm going to present you, the wife of a senator from California, on Books, Beer, and Bullshit, where afterwards we're going to talk about sex toys that are mounted on a foot, the vajankle, you know?
Have fun with that. I think I just got equated to a wife of a senator from California. I'm not 100% sure, but I think
not totally. No.
I think that just happened.
But no, people do that. They, you know, come on, Books, Beer, and Bullshit. I try to give them a heads up. Like, you need to understand what kind of light you're going to be.
It's in the name, right? So just throwing bullshit, like being bold enough to put bullshit in the actual name of your podcast, I would think would be enough to ward off wives of senators. Like, that, I would think that's not who they would want to be associated with.
The writers, you know, they're sluts. They don't care. They just want to get the names out. And then sometimes they don't realize what they're doing. I should teach them a lesson from now on. Maybe that'll be the goal.
Truer words, man. Truer words.
We once had someone approach us with a copy of a gay Western. Do you remember that cowboy book.
That was exciting. Yep. Which we didn't review.
Yeah. And then there was another one that was like an autobiography about a guy who fishes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Hence our contact form on our website, which basically says, if you use this contact form, we will not review your book.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And to be fair, that has cut down the amount of review requests that come from the contact form, right?
We really don't. Yeah, we don't get many contact requests through that form anymore. So, yeah, absolutely effective. So, Frank, if you want to borrow a page from our book, I would say that's a good place to start.
Fantastic. You know, we don't get them often, but we do get them. And then I play the diarrhea song right before I interview you.
Motherfucker. Mm. That means us.
Yeah, I did that to you, didn't I?
You really did that to us. Yeah, you did.
Hey, Frank, let's do this again sometime next the literary tribute to G.G. Allen part 2 comes out.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but M.P. Johnson did announce just recently the next tribute book, the literary tribute book, is going to be about the Misfits.
I'm out.
Well, there you go. There you go. Frank, if you need a co-host, so you guys want to review that on your podcast, I will
brush it.
The Misfits. You motherfucker. And I will listen. You want to talk about whores.
All I know about the Misfits is that Metallica remade one of their songs. It was goddamn brilliant. That's pretty much all I know about them. And My Chemical Romance remade one of their songs too, and that was brilliant. But I don't know a whole lot about the Misfits themselves.
And Glenn Danzig needs a hug.
Yeah, yeah. I got to tell you, Danzig, the Danzig band never liked anything that he did under that Danzig moniker. So, but the Misfits stuff seemed like it might be a little more up my alley.
Oh, hey, if we're talking about metal, I just want to say that, I work for an undisclosed retail company, and the drummer from Anthrax is a normal customer, a regular customer in my store. I actually saw him like a week ago at Starbucks.
That's pretty awesome. Cool.
I think Anthrax is coming out with a new album.
Oh, yeah. Somewhere. Yep. I knew they're touring. So I saw that they were touring, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that dude that comes into my store is touring. That was my thought.
Scott Ian isn't the drummer for Anthrax, right? He was just the drummer for MOD?
No, that's Charlie Benante is the drummer for Anthrax. Scott Ian's the guitar player for Anthrax.
There you go. Metal talk. Speaking of which, did you guys heard what happened in my homeland? Like Great White Part 2 happened?
No.
Yeah, a Romanian nightclub that was hosting a metal act went up in flames. Very, very similar to the Great White whatever that happened in, what was that, 2003, I think, 2004? Mm. Yeah.
It wasn't like in Sweden where they do it on purpose and everybody knows it's going to happen, right?
No, I'm pretty sure that this is a big surprise to the 30 people that died. I don't think any of them were expecting it. So,
in Sweden, they would totally plan that out to go that way.
They would. That's a good point. I want to just illustrate the amount of restraint it took, because never at any point did I send that to you, Livius, right?
No, you didn't. Yeah. I caught wind of it on, I don't know, probably on Reddit or something the other day.
Then anytime anything. Oh, even in this book, did you notice Transylvania came up?
I did.
I highlighted that quote, but again, self-restraint. I don't want to harp on the whole Romania thing. So I'm trying to make it's a conscious effort I'm making to leave your homeland out of it.
It's just I'd like to say that there's never anything positive that comes out news-wise about Romania, and nobody has been able to disprove me on that yet. Not one person has said, oh no, look here, Nobel Peace Prize winner. Nope, nothing.
In the context,
maybe we need a literary tribute to Romania.
Oh my God, oh, Frank, can you write that so I can make Rob read it?
God damn it. In the context of the G.G. Allen book, it was a werewolf that was coming from Romania. I just want to say. Yeah,
that is true.
Of course it was. Of course it was.
Of course it was. Well, I mean, it could have been anything in this book, let's be honest.
All right, I think it's time to wrap it up. Rob, oh my God, what are we doing next? We don't have a guest host for next week.
Yeah, unless we find someone at the last minute, it's just going to be you and I. So people will have to get used to the idea of
that awkward thing where we are always with other people, and now it's just me and you, and we won't know what to say to one. Oh, it's going to be really weird. What are we doing? What are we doing next?
We are going to go back to one of our favorite authors, and we are going to review the book Zeros by Chuck Wendig. It did come out a few months ago, but with the lazy summer of podcasting and everything, I think it fits in to our schedule. So we're going to be talking about Zeros, Chuck Wendig, a little bit of hacker action. This is our first non-Star Wars, non-Miriam Black look at a Chuck Wendig book.
You qualify, like, this is a first for us. This isn't our seventh Chuck Wendig episode.
Well, it's original content that's not Miriam Black is what I was trying to talk about.
Very, very true. Very much looking forward to that. And we're just going to reference the movie Hackers a lot. I think I'm going to have to watch that before this week.
Zero Cool.
Very Acid Zero Burn. Cool. Very good. Very nice. This will be interesting then. Until then, I'm Livia Snedden.
I'm Rob Olson.
And I'm Frank Edler. Keep reading!